Translation. We, the Kumaras, know that you are the supreme absolute truth, the personality of Godhead, who manifests his transcendental form in the uncontaminated mode of pure goodness. This transcendental eternal form of your personality, this transcendental eternal form of your personality can be understood only by your mercy through unflinching devotional service, by great sages whose hearts have been purified in the devotional way. Okay, so this is the beginning of the prayers by the Kumaras, and of course these praying is one of the nine processes of devotional service, our yoga. So we should really get into it. You know, we should be, Hare Krishna should be known as praying fools like that, praying all the time. And of course the prayers can be the essence, the content of our mantra, our japa recitation. So they're starting off, if you look at this ourselves, what Prabhupada's translation says, they know. They're starting off with knowledge. It's nice to start with knowledge. It's better to start with knowledge than ignorance. And if we have knowledge, we can apply it, okay? And get to go from exist, I'm awake, sat, chit, I know something, okay? Ananda, I'm applying it. And then we can become happy, okay? And make other people happy. We know that you are the supreme absolute truth. We know that you are the supreme absolute truth, the personality of Godhead. So it'll come out that there's many different truths, many different absolute truths, you know. But the supreme amongst all the absolute truths is the personality of Godhead, okay. You know? And of course, his form will be a very, very special form of a very, very special aspect of his reality. You know? And so he manifests a transcendental form in Shuddha Sattva. Well, that's the first qualification for experiencing this transcendental form, and actually knowing him in his form, not just in his reputation or things like that. Knowing him in his form, you've got to be in the mode of pure goodness, okay? Yeah, and it can only be understood by his mercy. He doesn't have to give it. He's giving it by mercy. But also, from our side, we have to be engaged in ananya bhak, undeviating devotional service. So it's like it's a two-way street, you know. We're trying to do selfless service to Krishna. We're trying to love Krishna, you know, and not want anything out of him. No exploitation. You know? If we do that, if we're successful in doing that, which in some ways is not hard. When you start to walk, it seems like a real difficult process. You know? It seems like a good idea, but you keep falling down. And fortunately, you have thick diapers on and a naturally a good padded rear end, so the falls aren't so difficult. You know? And but after some time, you'll see, you ask any adult, when was the last time you slipped and fell? You know, and it's very rare. You remember more or something, but it's very rare, you know, happening. So we can do it. You know, it's natural. It's natural for us to be uncontaminated lovers. You know? And once we do that from our side, then Krishna reciprocates from his side by his mercy. And then we can understand his transcendental form. Maybe we'll all get that by the end of this class. Maybe we'll all get it today. Maybe we've had it, seen his transcendental form. Okay? And how do we get this unflinching devotion? Well, we've got to be great sages whose hearts have been purified in the devotional way. So we've got to purify our heart. Not just our senses, not just our mind, but our heart, our intelligence. Prabhupada's purport. Oh, yeah. So here's this verse again. This is like the most important verse, we think, in this chapter. I'll chant one line, and you go ahead and chant from your side. This is the four Kumaras. Tasya Aravinda Nayanasya Padaravinda. Kinjauka Mishra Tulasi Makaranda Vayu. Antargata svabibarena chakaratesham. Shankshobam aksharajusam apichit vitanvo. When the breeze carrying the aroma of tulasi leaves from the toes or the lotus feet of the personality of Godhead entered the nostrils of these sages, they experienced a change both in body and mind, even though they were attached to the impersonal Brahman understanding. So where we're situated here at 902 Hillcrest in Murfreesboro, Tennessee, looking out on Medical Center Parkway with cars going by right and left, just across the big road there, the main road, Broad Street, down a little bit, is the Bunny Love, the Bunny Love Bakery, some old South place. And when they're firing, they got a lot of trucks going out, you know. And when they're firing their engines up, you can just smell the bread. I didn't know what it was, is where it was coming from to start with, but you can tell when they're cooking cinnamon bread. You can tell when they're cooking, and it's actually quite attractive. Man. So I got that going. So these sages. And they got this smell, my goodness. It's such an interesting smell, you know, totally intoxicating like that. Yeah. Okay. Okay, Prabhupada's purport. The absolute truth, which we're talking about here, can be understood in three features: Brahman, localized Paramatma, and Bhagavan, the supreme personality of Godhead. Here it is admitted that the personality of Godhead, supreme personality of Godhead, is the last word in understanding the absolute truth. Okay. My social security number is, and I won't say it because that gives you access to all my secret powers. You know, you can make me melt. Anyway, everybody on the phone probably has a social security number, or from other countries, a DNI or something. You know, everybody has a number. And probably you also have a driver's license number, and you may have a number for your insurance policy. And actually, if you go through and make a list of all the unique identifiers that you have within relationship to your country of origin, got a passport number, it's quite a list of names you have that apply only to you, like that and so on. Yeah. And so are these absolute truths? Will you always be 666-333-2154? No. These are all relative truths, relative to your body, your life, relative to your nation, like that. You know? So absolute truth has to be sat, okay? It has to be eternal. It's true or not. It can't be dissolved by different timing factors and divided. You know? So here is talking about several absolute truths. And we have a nice picture here, if you can see it, of ice, water, and vapor or steam, you know. So these are all the same, what's the word, substance, you know. I guess it's vastu is the word. These are all the same substance, but they're three different categories of the same substance. So which of them is more real? Which of them is more real? Are they different? No, they're not different. They're the same substance. And of course, we give the example of the sun god, the sun globe, and the sunshine, you know. But so if I, you know, blow some, if a cloud, if you're in the fog, walking in the fog, and it's going against your face and everything else, it's, you know, it's not so much of a problem. If you're down by the beach and a big wave splashes up, hits you in the face with water in your face, it's a little bit more of a reaction, more of a reality to you. But if somebody throws a block of ice at you, you know, they can crush your head. You know, whatever, rearrange you like this and that and so on. So this is the point, is that the absolute truth is known in three phases. The Kumaras are having their experience of it. And when they finally come in contact with the form of the personality of Godhead, in the form of the absolute truth, then they experience something else. So it says that Brahman, Paramatma, Bhagavan, they're all the absolute truth. But only the Bhagavan realization is productive of enough bliss to be a permanent position. Yeah. The others are unstable. Okay. So, very, very nice point the Kumaras are making. Next, even though the four Kumaras were instructed, you know, by their great learned father, Brahma, yeah, they could not actually understand the absolute truth. So is that Brahma's problem or their problem? They could not actually understand the absolute truth. They could only understand the absolute truth when they personally saw the personality of Godhead with her own eyes. With her own eyes. Yeah. So here we have a famous illusion down below. And what do you see? Do you see faces or a vase? Like that. Yeah. Sometimes the contrast is better. If you look on the internet for visual illusions, you'd have to discover a lot of preaching tools. A lot of preaching tools. Visual illusions, you know. This whole area of perception in psychology is a very nice area to shake people up on the reality of the gross world and take them to realize that what you see depends upon what you think. And what you think, of course, depends upon what your motivation is. So in the end, you know, love is the thing. Motivation is the thing that generates what we're thinking, what we're experiencing. I'm flipping back and forth. This one is hard to hold the vase. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Can you hold the vase? It's hard. Other ones, it's hard to hold the two faces. One is interesting because the two faces are a little different, and one is female and one is male. You know, these are pretty identical. Yeah. So we by hearing, we see. We see by hearing. I'm telling you what it is. You see, oh, yeah, now I see. I understand. Yeah. So by hearing. So somehow or other, they had a great opportunity to hear from Lord Brahma, and he had a personal relationship by this time. He had a personal relationship with Mahavishnu, you know. And so we can, what's the term? We can appreciate that maybe there was some problem they had, you know. They heard, but they couldn't hear sufficiently, you know. So sometimes, yeah, we preach something. My experience is that people become involved in the Hare Krishna movement. Many times, I got prasadam when I was visiting my girlfriend in Sweden, you know, like that. Oh, yeah, then I met you guys later on. My friend took you to a festival you were having in Houston, you know. Then I heard you had a restaurant here in Hawaii, and I came. You know, and that's, you know, we're an international movement. We keep shooting arrows into people here and there, here and there, here and there. And finally, you know, the people wake up enough then to Doshrada Sadhu Sangha. They start wanting to associate with these people and hang out with these guys and see what they got, especially their guru. Okay, so the Kumaras, only when they saw the form were they able to understand God. Okay, in other words, Baba says, if one sees or understands the personality of Godhead, sees or understands the personality of Godhead, the other two features of the Absolute Truth, namely impersonal Brahman and localized Paramatma, are also understood, automatically understood. Therefore, the Kumaras confirm, you are the Absolute Truth. You are the Absolute Truth. Yeah. The impersonalists may argue that since the personality of Godhead was so nicely decorated, he was therefore not the Absolute Truth. Okay, I couldn't quite understand that exactly, but I think what Prabhupada's saying here is that a person may argue, you know, that the Absolute Truth has to be one. He can't have any kind of aspects or features or divisions, and he ceases to be the Absolute Truth, like that. And so, if you know somebody like some girl, she's a model. You know, I actually met this girl. She was very famous as a model in this. In ISKCON devotee, they had a picture of her on some of our magazines. And as far as I understand, when you saw her personally, she was a nice person, but she wasn't like something which would, you know, knock down all the, you know, the magazine covers in Europe and stuff like that and so on. You know, so some people are photogenic. You know, when the camera's there and stuff like that. When they've got somebody who knows how to angle them properly, who knows how to do proper eyeliner and color textures and this and that, you know, okay. Then, you know, they have intensity. So Krishna, by himself, you know, is not so impressive. Maybe he requires ornaments, you know. He requires an abode, yeah. And then we can appreciate him. But that's the truth, and he's not the absolute truth. That's kind of the objection being raised here. How can the Absolute Truth have ornaments? The impersonalists may argue that since the Supreme Personality of Godhead was so nicely decorated, he was therefore not the Absolute Truth. But here it is confirmed that all the variegatedness of the Absolute Platform is constituted of Shuddha Sattva. Okay. So the ornaments are actually, what is it? He's Bhusha Bhushana. What's it called? He's the ornament of all ornaments. You know? And so the ornaments actually become, they're from him. They're not different from him. And they become glorified by glorifying him. And actually he glorifies them, his personal form, then they glorify them. So it's a very subtle conception of the absolute truth, that the absolute truth has divisions. Okay? In the material world, any quality, goodness, passion, or ignorance is contaminated. So thinking about that means it's impossible to have complete stupidity. It doesn't matter how much you are an ass, a complete ass, you know, you're still going to, even if you're Shrek's ass and try to become the most famous, biggest ass in the world, you're still going to have some goodness in your personality like that. On the other hand, yeah, okay, even the quality of goodness here in the material world is not free from tinges of passion and ignorance. Even the quality of goodness here in the material world, you got it? I can try to get it myself. Even the quality of goodness here in the material world is not free from the tinges of passion and ignorance. For me, this was a big confusion, maybe other people, because I couldn't figure out what was wrong with the mode of goodness. You know, goodness seems good. Well, because it's not really good. That's the problem. It's always going to be contaminated. But in the transcendental world, only pure goodness without a tinge of passion and or ignorance exists. And, of course, we can come to that platform, Vishuddhasattva, by being purified in the devotional way, you know, following the great sages, you know, where we can see the entire material world, and we're detached from it, and we can see that it is a reflection of the spiritual world and how it's reflecting the spiritual world, and of course we can turn around at that point. But in the transcendental world, only pure goodness without any tinge of passion or ignorance exists. Therefore, the form of the personality of Godhead and his variegated pastimes and paraphernalia are all pure Shuddhasattva. What do we have in the spiritual? We have a Samvit potency, Sandini potency, and Vadini potency. So Samvit is reflected as Sat, or is Sat, Sandini is Chit, like that. So Balaram is the basis of this. He's he creates all the abodes and places like that. So he's an expansion of Krishna, first expansion. Such variegatedness and pure goodness is exhibited eternally by the Lord for the satisfaction of the devotee. The devotee does not want to see the personality of absolute truth in voidness or impersonalism. In one sense, the absolute transcendental variegatedness is meant only for the devotees, not for others, because this distinct feature of the transcendental variegatedness can be understood only by the mercy of the Supreme Lord and not by mental speculation or the ascending process. So to say it's for the devotees, well, of course, Radharani is also a devotee, that, so on. So in some respect, at the highest level, it's also there. And this variegatedness is, you know, for her to in her relationship with Krishna, and we're following that. And on the right-hand side, we tossed in, we got this nice high-density copy of this beautiful picture of Krishna in the flowers like that. I guess you'd have to say this is Pushpa Gopal. I don't know who did it. When you blow it up, it's so nice. You know, it's just a nice picture like that. Totally intoxicating. And, of course, beautiful. Very beautifully done. The hair is beautifully done. The halo. The framing. Got a peacock in the background. You can go through and look at the different birds, you know, and some different variety of flowers. The ornaments are nice. Everything is nice about this picture. But take away the flowers. Whoop! Photoshop. Take away the birds. Whoop! Take away the flute. Whoop! Take away the crown. Whoop! Take away everything. Just Krishna there in his body. Well, he's still got beautiful eyes. He's got beautiful lips. Okay. Yeah. So the Kumaras are experiencing this. Then Prabhupada finishes by saying, it is said that one can understand the supreme personality of Godhead when one is even slightly favored by him. Otherwise, without his mercy, a man can go on. Okay, I got a problem here. A man may go on speculating for thousands of years and not understand what is actually the absolute truth. This mercy can be perceived by the devotee when he is completely freed from material contamination. Yeah. It is stated, therefore, that only when all contamination is rooted out and the devotee is completely detached from material attraction, can he receive this mercy from the Lord. Okay. Tesham, let's go to verse. Tesham, oh boy. Tesham, papam, pam, tatam. Oh boy. In this lifetime, we're free from previous contamination or previous license. Tesham, trantakatam, papam, jananam, punya, karmanam. Te dvandra moha niyamukta bhajante mandada vrataha. Yeah. So the different verses, it seems the Prabhupada was paraphrasing one verse here. I think also some Brahma Samhita verses also fit into this. But it's a fundamental aspect, How many fundamental aspects are there to our philosophy, which are being shown and repeated from different angles so they enter into our intelligence and pervade it? And how many do you need before actually you can appreciate, the Krishna in a fixed fashion? If you go to Mahavishnu Loka, and by proper worship of Mahavishnu, we can then be elevated to the Vaikuntha, Ayodhya, Lila Avatars, and then Dwarka, Mathura. What else we got here? Yeah, Goloka and higher and higher like that. We can go on enhancing our service in different ways like that and so on. Yeah. So Kumaras represent a very, very nice place. It's just, the doorstep of Vaikuntha. And already it's such a fantastic place. I got to adjust with my robot here. Okay. So that's the purport. Let me see what else I got in this PowerPoint show. Oh, yeah. And what I did is I put the... any comments about this verse in particular? Questions right away? Otherwise, I can go ahead and... I can go ahead and just go through the verses in general. Maybe about 4 or 5 verses here. How many are there?
Well, I've unmuted everybody. If anyone wants to say something now.
Okay. My parrot does, so I better mute myself.
Okay, so here's the four of the verses all within context. So somebody has some comment on that?
Maharaj?
Yes.
Hi, Krishna. How do we help change an impersonalist attitude? When we talk to impersonalists, they seem so stuck on that. And how do we help change them to see them as absolute, as a personality, the supreme personality of Godhead? Because they're really stuck in this idea of, it's all one, and how could it be variegated? I was wondering if I could hear your thoughts on that.
Well, Hansa Duda told us, the Prabhupada said, every single psychological circumstance you can find in Srimad Bhagavatam. Okay? So there's so many different kinds of impersonalists. Of course, two very, very famous examples are the Kumaras and Sukadeva Goswami. And the Kumaras, it says they especially, were changed by smelling, So you can take your impersonalist friend into the Sunday feast or something, and the person's friend can smell everything, and some of them, that will be it. I always remember when Papa came to Berkeley, they had the reporters there, and some big reporters, And afterwards, they had a nice prasadam thing, maybe about 12 people there. And this one really big guy, and he was taking prasadam, and he was really relishing it, And a robust guy, and he said, "My God, this is good." So maybe some people, it's by smelling. Other people, it's by, like the Sukadeva Goswami, he heard the Bhagavatam. He heard the Bhagavatam, the stories like that. So I would say that, you got to know the person. To a large degree, as far as I can understand, preaching means listening. Maybe you put some words out there to see what the person says. Prabhupada is like poking people. He goes and they Prabhupada talks to them, you may say something to, like, you know, rattle them, so they become a little angry, or they become a little affectionate, or, you know, a doctor, he squeezes you, he looks at you, you stick out your tongue, you know. So you got to know the person and talk to them, whatever. Specifically, one person is Bob Bickford. He was a really detached guy. He was our accountant, and a very simple kind of accounting thing in Berkeley. You see, he was just doing it to make his money, and he was really concerned with you know, spiritualization. You know. So anyway, I would associate with him, hang out with him, Sunday feast, he'd come, other things. And other people didn't want to because he was kind of an impersonalist, you know. So it was many, many years before actually at one point he just said something and spontaneously, you know, I said, well, if you were serving Krishna, you wouldn't be so attached, that little, little subtle attachment, you know, like that. And he said, touche. Because after years, I finally got it across. And he had to admit, yeah, that his impersonal realization really hadn't relieved him from all personal attachment, you know, material attachment. He was talking about canned green beans at that time and how he was heating them on the pilot light on the stove. He wasn't even, like, putting them in water. And he was so detached and everything else. But you could see he was a little attached to his goodness, you know. Yeah, and he could see it too in that position. But it was years of association, you know. So that's what I say. There's all, you've got to know people. There's a lot of variety. And then the Bhagavatam will give us, you know, good hints and stimulation about how to approach people from different angles. That's okay?
Yeah, this person that I met, she was just like this real new agey type. And she was saying, like, she was coming regularly to Sunday feast that we had here, given by a devotee, and she said, I don't know what it is about this food, but it's really different. It's just special. And she said that during the week she would go to the health food store and try to get, you know, buy different vegetarian foods. And she said, I just can't, you know, I can't find that taste. You know, I just don't know what it is. And anyway, we ended up having, you know, real friendly, and we ended up having some talks. But, you know, she was like wanting to, I just want to jump right in. I love this. And is there a temple I can join? And I said, no. And but I said, if you really want to get into it, I need to tell you some more basic things. And that is that, you know, we follow the four regulated principles, no meat eating, no intoxication, no gambling, and no illicit sex outside of marriage. And she said, what? No meat eating? Oh, I love my meat. I got to have my meat. I don't know if this is true or not. Now, I disagree, and, you know, and stuff like that. And, you know, I told her about chanting rounds, and, oh, this is too much for me. And so she began to reject the whole philosophy just because she thought we were wrong about that. And I tried to talk to her, and I think if I had been better at speaking to her and just being able to accommodate to her current realization, I, in hindsight, I should have said, well, don't worry about that for now. You know, just keep coming, keep chanting with us, you know, hearing Bhagavad Gita. She could chant the Sanskrit really well. She was real intelligent like that. But, you know, just keep coming, and, you know, we welcome you to our feast. But instead, I guess, you know, I was just trying to push her too hard, or, you know, just trying to insist that, you know, well, you know, this is what you have to do, and stuff. So she just ended up rejecting the whole thing, and but, you know, I guess I should have told her, well, you know, there is something very special about this food, and it's very spiritualized and by the personality of Godhead. And she was real attracted to Lord Jagannath and wanted to sew for him. And but anyway, she just got in this real big argument with me over the phone, and just kind of talked over me and said, you know, it's all one, and it's all absolute, and, you know, and I don't buy this, and I wasted my time, you know, reading halfway through the Bhagavad Gita and you all and such and such. So, you know, I can see now, I'm just terrible, really, at preaching, you know.
But it doesn't matter, because it's the whole point is that, you know, if she read through half the Bhagavad Gita, forget it. You know, Prabhupada said once they come to Krishna, they can never get away. So all those kind of things, association with devotees, they affect the root. So externally, things may be going on like this and that, but she said so much contact and association with devotees, it's only a matter of time now before the things can happen, a result like that, you know. Yeah.
Yeah,
but
I think
we can always improve
like,
our sankirtan
like,
and our preaching.
Yeah, I think what Prabhupada would do, like in the beginning, would just, well, you know, never mind, you know, just keep coming. And then, you know, more purification would take place. And
well, sometimes though, Prabhupada would irritate people. You could see that. He would be so irritating. Because he knew that actually they wouldn't come. They'd be hanging out a little bit more. And something would draw them away, a little bit lost, you know. Yeah. But, and so sometimes Prabhupada would be irritating the people. So it's a big art. You're learning how to preach, you know.
Yeah.
But it's better to do what you're doing than do nothing. You're doing really good. It sounds to me like you're doing very well.
Wow.
Yeah. Anybody else have any points here? Or else we can go on with the other verses in some context. Anybody else do also?
I just like to say, I think Mother Candita makes a really good point. I know I just came back from vacation on the East Coast trying to preach to my mom and my siblings. And it's very difficult to try to preach without being offensive, because it's a pretty austere philosophy that we're following, especially, you know, the sexual aspects and the meat eating, as Mother Candida was pointing out. I mean, go ahead. I'm sorry.
Oh, well, she didn't have any problem with the illicit sex part. She's just older woman. But she just was real attached to that meat eating thing, and you know, saying, "Well, we're not getting enough protein, and that's just BS, and all that stuff." And and then plus, you know, when I called her in the evening, she wanted me to, tending to hear the philosophy, but then she started getting offensive, you know, and criticizing. The devotees, the philosophy, Prabhupada, it was all bogus and stuff. And finally I just said, you know, I'm sorry, I have to hang up. I can't hear this anymore. So sometimes it's just really hard to break through that, you know, it's attached to it's all one. It's like, tossing pearls before swine sometimes.
Exactly. That's a tenth offense.
You have to be careful with offenses.
To talk the intimate glories of the Lord to the faithless. Exactly.
Yeah.
A position like
that.
And then also to the point is that, but it's also to that you've shown her that you have a certain level of tolerance, you know, but before which you'll break off. It's also been quite impressive if people have principles. Let me go ahead perspective here, because it's very nice to see these prayers, to analyze them and look at them, you know. So the first prayer yesterday, the Kumara said, "Our dear Lord, you are not manifested to rascals," okay, maybe appropriate to Mataji's experience, "even though you are seated within the heart of everyone. But as far as we are concerned, we see you face to face, although you are unlimited. The statements we have heard about you from our father, Brahma, through the years, have now been actually realized by your appearance." Okay. We know, they've been realized, they've heard the statement, they've heard about the personality of Godhead, apparently, you know, but by experiencing him directly like this, those realizations or hearing is becoming realized. "We know that you are the supreme absolute truth, the personality of Godhead, who manifests his transcendental form in the uncontaminated mode of goodness, pure goodness. This transcendental eternal form of your personality can be understood only by your mercy through the unflinching devotional service by great sages whose hearts have been purified in the devotional way. Persons who are very expert and most intelligent," okay, is that us, "in understanding things as they are, engage in hearing narrations of the auspicious activities and pastimes of the Lord." activities and pastimes, which are worth chanting and worth hearing. Such persons do not care even for the highest material benediction, namely liberation. You know, it's kind of interesting. The highest thing you get in the material world is to get out of it. To say nothing of other less important benedictions like material happiness of the heavenly kingdom. O Lord, we pray that you let us be born in any hellish condition of life, just as long as our hearts and minds are always engaged in the service of your lotus feet. Our words are made beautiful by speaking of your activities, just as tulasi leaves are beautified when offered unto your lotus feet, and as long as our ears are always filled with the chanting of your transcendental qualities. This is quite a big request. I mean, how can it be a hellish condition if all these things are going on? O Lord, we therefore offer our respectful obeisance unto your eternal form as the personality of Godhead, which you have so kindly manifested before us. Your supreme eternal form cannot be seen by unfortunate, less intelligent persons. But we are so much satisfied in our mind and vision to see it. Yeah. Your supreme eternal form cannot be seen by less intelligent persons. We are satisfied. Yeah. Yeah. Yontar hridi gatopi duratma tvam sadyaiva no nayana mulam anta radha yahya kana vivarena guya gato na pitranu varnita raha babir babaha. Yeah. Yeah. This is all the Sanskrit then. Yeah. And of course, it's very nice just to chant the Sanskrit like that and so on. Yeah. So these Krishna consciousness is a matter of iconic adjustment. You know, on a lower level of intelligence, when we're using the mind, more situated in the mind, it tends to work more in the mode of passion. So we tend to organize things, you know, past, present, future. We organize our experiences, our world. And then we start to use more sophisticated things. It would have been, you know, more complicated verb structures and time structures to organize things. But still, you can always diagram a sentence, right? You know, subject, object, subject, verb, object, adverbs, prepositional phrase, you know. And you can always diagram it in this kind of linear fashion with branches and everything else. So other grammars may be more sophisticated. They are different. They are very different. You know, Chinese grammar is more iconographic in that sense, you know. But this is the first level of smarnam, when we can actually make a nice sophisticated one-paragraph sentence like Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati, and when we can hold the whole thing in our mind, our heart at one time. So it's the first level of smarnam, when you've got this understanding, you're developing this intelligence in your heart, extended intelligence. Then beyond that, then you get into different levels of contemplation, meditation. And so then we have our bhava, our sthayi bhava, some experience. You know, we saw a Janmashtami festival, and somehow or other it was so transcendental with the Abhishek and the lights were off and this and that. And we go on, and we're relishing this for years afterwards. And it's below that ecstasy, that bhava, anubhava, sattvika bhava, vichari bhava. It'll go on, you know, for years. We'll keep coming back to it. And other transcendental experiences, maybe we were related to it. So we're developing a whole reality which is beyond time as a linear sense, Again, like a yantra, you know. And then as we go on, we purify that. And so maybe then our relationship to Srimad Bhagavatam should also be iconographic. You know, we can understand it linearly. You know, first the dap up, devahuti, akuti, prasuti, uta. Yeah, and it's very nice because then we have a thing where we can put everything in perspective. You know, we can see how this Kamara thing fits in, you know. As we go on like this, then of course we can begin to start to develop our image, our icon, and we can start to like adjust it, put this in here, take that out here, you know, a feast. We're offering a whole feast to Krishna. But it has to look nice. What's in the middle, you know, the sabji? Of course, might put the sabji in the middle and the rice around that. And then Puri's, yeah, there's a whole way in which you honor the feast. You honor the feast like that, and the way it's served like that. And you go back and forth from one thing to the other. So, of course, Prabhupada's purpose, he does this. You can put them in the linear thoughts so easily and adjust them and everything else, and they're pretty sophisticated. But you see, he doesn't work in that linear fashion so often. He'll take the principal thing, you know, go to like something which enhances that, and you go back to the principal, then you go to something which is a contrast to it, you know. And so it's all a matter of tasteful adjustment in our relation to Bhagavatam. And of course, Bhagavatam is the heart of everything. Chaitanya Charitamrita is the Srimad Bhagavatam class, Bhagavad Gita is the ABC introduction, Nectar of Devotion is a summary of all the things, you know, like that. And building, our iconographic experience, you know. And so this fits in, this recitation of the Kumaras and their experience and actually being there with the Kumaras at the door. Are we a flower? You're chanting Hare Krishna in the windows of the spiritual world and looking at the pictures of Kumaras, and we're looking. What are we? Are we a flower? Are we some other people? You know, are we something, and what are we doing? You know, and then it gradually becomes more manifest. And of course, Ruchi, then we can actually cultivate our particular taste, cultivate it, wake it up more and more. We become attached to it. You know, we're not being drug off, asaktis, you know. And then, bhava, you know. And so, again, we may enter into through the four Kumaras, but actually we discover, like Gopa Kumar, he was in Vaikuntha, but they were pushing him to go on to Goloka, you know. And he appreciated, even though he was very much absorbed in the bhava and the experience of Vaikuntha, participating, he still wasn't able to give his full self to it because it wasn't demanding his full self. So we're looking for some master who will demand it all of us like that, who won't take anything else, some cruel, sadistic fellow who wants everything, you know, so on. So our perspective on this, on these verses and stuff like that. So any final questions and comments here? By the way, if you want to get in touch with us here, you can see on the web, on the thing here, we have our website, which will hook you up to our address and telephone number and everything else, and our publications, jayarama.us, www.jayarama.us, United Snakes. Okay.
I wanted to make...
comments, complaints.
Yeah. I just wanted to make an observation. I got stuck also when it said that the impersonalist may have an objection that the absolute person, how could be so nicely decorated? You also see in, for instance, in Christianity, in Judaism, in Islam, there's a conception of the personal God. He's dressed in robes with a beard or something like that. There's no understanding, to my knowledge, of any ornamentation, you know, beauty, anything like that. If he's the oldest, then he must be a very old man. And as far as his dress, it just might maybe some white robes. It's kind of tinged with some impersonalism, or at least lack of understanding.
Yeah, there it is. You can see my screen, right?
Yes.
Yeah, this would do God. I mean, how many hits we get here? I mean, we get a lot of hits, you know. And yeah, this is what you're saying. You know, he's in the cloud with a beard, or he's out there with a robe, you know, like that. Yeah, yeah. Let's see if we do. We put in Allah. What images we get for Allah? It's going to be even worse, right? Yeah.
Yeah, without a face, most probably.
Yeah. Then we get the name. That's interesting. Ah, the name is so venerable, huh? The calligraphy of the name is so venerable. Yeah. Yeah. Wow. Weird. Allah is all I need. Allah is my Lord. Allah is calling you. Okay. It's very interesting. His abode, his Kabbalah. Allah is one. Yeah. Turn or burn. Yeah. Yahweh? How do you spell that? A-A? Yeah, Yahweh. Yeah. Okay. Then we got the name again. Yeah, being spelled out. Yeah. Yeah. And One more. Let's try Dios. Okay. Still the same thing. Yeah. Yeah. Now, here we go. Okay. Haribol! What's the predominating color? What's the color that strikes you here?
Blue?
Yeah, kind of a purple.
Blue and gold.
Huh? Yeah, blue, yeah, blue, gold, yeah. Yeah, blue and gold, prominent. White, some white. That's interesting. Our ISKCON picture is more like subdued, you know. Yeah. So, my God, whew. Yeah. This whole access to media and communication is creating a whole different environment than people have had before. It's like you have so much access to so many things in different places, but it's not all that profound many times. You know? But it definitely it's just more broad, you know, than in time and space than people have ever had before. Just look at other cultures. Wow. So maybe want to thank everybody. We're here in Tennessee still and still working, trying to contact people and work on this psychology and the secret program. That's our passion. We're being led by that. And good opportunities is coming along. It's moving along. Our biggest obstacle is that Ramon Mujica, who's the director of the National Library in Peru, and very enthused person, and a very nice devotee of Santa Teresa of Lima, and student of Jung, and, you know, a very broad person. But the thing is, he's caught up in taking care of some real heavy political stuff there, you know, so on. So he hasn't had time to get back to this development. But our idea is 2018 doing a very big, you know, symposium on art and the sacred, and in between some smaller ones. And now we actually have good perspective from some very big global people, Kalyan Kumar Chakravarti, Hector Behar, you know, nice people that are looking at things from a very broad perspective. So we can maybe figure out, like, you know, what from our perspective where we can make the best contribution, and what is the audience we should teach to, like that and stuff. So thank you all very much. And again, it's a great privilege to be a part of the Sangha and hear the classes and so on.
Maharaj, a final comment. I really appreciated your example when the question was asked about preaching to the impersonalist. I like the example you gave of the doctor touching and probing and, you know, poking his fingers in your belly, et cetera, to find what's sore, what's not. So before, you know, before he goes any further with how to treat you. And it just brought a lot of vision, because every time you go to the doctor, they're always, you know, touching and pulling and feeling, and that was a good analogy. And I was thinking that that Lord Chaitanya is famous really for not preaching so much to other than the intelligentsia, you know, people like Prakasananda and Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya, you know, people that were, that Lord Chaitanya could determine were actually open and pious. But for the masses of people, Mahaprabhu, his formula was kirtan and prasad for the masses. For the masses, he didn't preach.
Chanting, dancing, and feasting.
Yes, chanting, dancing, and feasting, and then gradually that would soften the heart and get them ready for Prabhupada and his army.
Next, that you can work it out in is dramas, right? Puppet shows, you know. The bird in the cage. Prabhupada wanted that from the very beginning. He was talking about dressing up and having dramas and stuff like that, and on the streets and so on, you know. Yeah. But it makes it nice. You know, we have a good Harinam program, and you, all of a sudden you just pop up in the little crowd and do like a bird in the cage. You know, it's so easy. You can just have two sticks and spread out like some thick yarn, have a cage there, and just you can do it. And people remember that. And they take the conception with them like that and stuff. So this street theater with Harinam is just, and you can get such an audience like that and stuff, you know. Okay, so thank you all very much. So we'll go ahead with our service.
Thank you, Maharaj.
Thank you, Maharaj. Keep
your
attention. Thank you, Maharaj. All glorious.
Hare Krishna.
Hare Bol.
Hare Bol.
Hare Bol. Muchas gracias.
Hare Bol. Hare Bol.